I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. Thank you for being with us today. Recent attacks in London, Manchester, as well as those in Kabul and Baghdad, they all serve as reminders of how much we rely on the authorities to protect us and how difficult it is for them to defend concerts or sporting events or shopping malls or mass transit. The U.S. has experienced this too, think San Bernardino or the Pulse nightclub shooting. Would-be attackers trying to enter the U.S., though, have two large oceans to cross, and obviously that's a significant layer of defense from anyone who wants to get here. Not an impossible barrier, though. I wanted to get a taste of what the people who patrol those waters, the Coast Guard, do, and what their job is like these days. So I joined them on patrol here at their Boston base.
So actually, where we're heading right now is where a lot of the activity with the natural gas tanker that comes in. So we're heading through the underneath the Tobin Bridge right now. All the local agencies send somebody out to come just to ensure that nobody's getting too close, just to kind of keep the way clear. If anybody does have ill intent with the tanker, we'll be able to react quickly enough to it.
How frequently do the tankers come in?
Bosun's mate, second class, Eric Vollmer, shook his head on that one. He can't say for security reasons. It's classified. If you don't remember what the Coast Guard is exactly, a quick crash course. It's the smallest branch of the military with about 36,000 active personnel. Began under Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton, yep, him again, as part of the Treasury Department's mission to protect U.S. maritime economic interests. Today, the Coast Guard is not under Treasury, nor does it fall under the Department of Defense. Instead, it's the purview of Homeland Security, which suggests accurately that when it comes to terrorism, the Coast Guard tries to stop it closer to home. This is Lieutenant Karen Kutkowitz with Coast Guard Public Affairs.
We wear hats that are different every day. We could be doing fisheries out here in the North Atlantic, making sure our fishermen stay safe. We could be doing counter-narcotics in the Eastern Pacific, making sure drugs stay off of the American streets. We can be doing different things every single day.
Added to our traditional mission set has really been a increased focus on that security element that you're talking about.
That's Coast Guard Boston Base Commander Brad Kelly.
We've added a force that we hadn't had prior to 9/11.
What are you expecting? What are you preparing for?
We have mounted automatic weapons on our vessels. We have M16s that we can carry aboard boardings that we've determined are higher threat. That deters a lot of threats, I believe.
Because something catastrophic coming from sea hasn't happened yet, they don't know what to expect. It's a massive task, partly because the ocean is so vast, partly because the Coast Guard budget is small relative to the other branches of the armed forces. Here at Coast Guard Base Boston, it's easy to think of their field of vision for their missions as Boston Harbor, but this is only one tiny area of the sea that the Boston base helps to protect. The day I boarded Cutter Seneca, it was undergoing regular maintenance and repairs to the tie downs on the helicopter landing pad. If you glance at the outside of the cutter, there are painted symbols of what its missions have been.
Above the blue E, you'll see like snowflakes and then four little green leaves. Those all indicate drug busts.
Those drug busts that Captain E.J. Marone mentioned don't happen here in Boston usually. Two-month missions on the cutter far from Boston are the norm for the Boston-based crew. They sail into the North Atlantic, down to the Caribbean, to Cuba and Haiti, even across the Panama Canal and into the Eastern Pacific. Bosun's mate, Third Class William Southard, spoke to me about one recent mission in the Eastern Pacific, to a boat that seemed to be moving a little too fast.
We were sent through the Panama Canal. We had one of our Marine Patrol aircraft spot a go-fast that was less than, I think, 15 miles away from us at that time. They had jettisoned their drugs. Actually had video of them putting the drugs into the water.
It's a typical ruse, he told me. Smugglers will run the drugs at night, and daytime they'll sit becalmed in their boats, pretending to be fishing.
We pulled up alongside the vessel, immediately jumped on board, patted them down for weapons, just a quick safety check, make sure that everything was safe for us to be there.
For the Coast Guard, a lot of this is simply about determining on the spot whether the people on the boat are really doing what they say they're doing, hundreds of miles out in the ocean.
We looked down around. They had no bait on board. They had no hooks. And really, the only thing for fishing gear they had was a few jugs and pieces of line that were strung together that they had thrown in the water. And then we waited for, I want to say, 11 and a half to 12 hours to get full permission to bring them on board, treat them as detainees.
And finally, the Coast Guard had to sink the boat. There's a lot of fuel on board, and they can't tow the boat, and they can't leave it floating in the ocean. Coast Guard crew often say they have 360-degree vision, as well as long and short depth of field. Their eyes have to know what to look for on lonely little boats 150 nautical miles offshore. At medium range, those eyes have to know, for example, that a fishing boat traveling too slowly through protected waters is suspicious. And at close range, those eyes are trained on the shoreline, just as they were in 2013 after the Boston Marathon bombing, when the city suddenly had to consider possible follow-up attacks coming from who knows where. As Bosun's Mate First Class Chris Rantuccio told me,
when we're conducting our security patrols, we're taught to be vigilant and look at everything with a higher level of scrutiny than most civilians would. I mean, the last thing we want is to miss something on our patrol that could turn into the next, you know, Boston Marathon bombing. So we're looking for, you know, small objects that seem out of place, things attached to piers, backpacks, things like that. So that might be something that a normal civilian would not necessarily think is out of place, but I think that our training teaches us to be that way. When I'm walking around the city, I look at things differently than my girlfriend would.
The vision of the Coast Guard also has to be imaginative, as I heard from Captain E.J. Marone.
We practice for whatever we can think of practicing. We have, I would say this, I would say most sectors, when they're doing their pollution exercises, we roll in sometimes a terrorism element to it.
How do you prepare for a cruise ship that comes into Boston Harbor and is taken hostage?
Interestingly, these are some scenarios that we have actually worked on. And that's, again, partnering with our local, state, and federal, meaning all the way from FBI on down, because there are different roles. If it becomes a hostage thing, we would turn it over to FBI. We become a mode of transportation to get them out there.
The Coast Guard seems to take it in stride, but the pressure of being constantly vigilant for many different scenarios while supported by a small budget, that is a daily challenge.
Sometimes it can feel overwhelming.
That's Lieutenant Karen Kutkiewicz again.
It's tough to have all these missions, even though we are at the best at all these things that we do.
So that was how I spent my day with the Coast Guard a couple of weeks ago here in Boston.